Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here's Lorraine Chisholm.
This week, the Paris Club agreed to temporarily suspend debt repayments for countries affected by the tsunamis. The Paris Club is made up of 19 creditor nations, including Britain, France, Germany, and the U.S., and meets monthly to discuss debts owed to them. So far, only Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and the Seychelles have accepted the offer. Critics say that suspension of debt repayment is not enough. They argue that debt cancellation is what is needed, not only in Asia, but in all impoverished countries struggling under a huge debt burden. Mark Fried is with Oxfam Canada and works lobbying the Canadian government on the issue of aid, trade, and debt relief. And he joins me this morning from Ottawa. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Lorraine.
I think maybe afternoon for you.
Excuse me?
I think it's afternoon for you.
It is afternoon for me, yes, certainly.
Okay, well, thanks for joining me. Now, the Paris Club offered a suspension of debt repayments, but I understand that there are some significant differences of opinion within the club. What are they?
Well, certainly there are countries that recognize debt relief, recognize what a burden debt is to countries and the difficulties it poses for the governments affected by the tsunami if they're going to have enough funds to rebuild after all of that destruction. There are the governments that seem to recognize that the UK is one of them. Canada seems to be is also favorable to some form of at least suspension, a moratorium. They've all agreed to the moratorium at this point. The United States and Japan seem to be the ones most reticent to go along.
I understand that the U.S. started off. They didn't want to even offer a debt moratorium.
Well, at the beginning, no one wanted to, but Canada was the first one to jump to the and say, yes, we should offer a moratorium.
Now, if a country accepts a suspension of debt repayments, would that come at the expense of the aid that has been offered?
It certainly shouldn't, although it depends. Aid has been pledged, a certain amount of aid has been pledged, and each countries were not always specific about how they were going to disperse that aid. That is, over how many years and in what form. And certainly countries could consider the suspension of payments as part of their aid. They may be calculating that. We don't know. So that in that case, it would come off the pledge. But pledges are one thing, and what they actually deliver is something else sometimes as well.
I understand that Thailand and India have turned down the offer, saying they actually prefer to keep up their payments. Why would they take that route?
Well, countries are a bit concerned about whether it would affect their credit rating and their ability to borrow in the future if they consider the suspension of repayments as being an admission that they're unable to keep up with the payments. And we think at Oxfam think that it's as long as the donor countries make it clear that this is a one-time event as a result of the natural disaster, then it should not affect their credit rating or their ability to borrow. However, the governments of India and Thailand may view it differently.
But couldn't that be counteracted by an explicit statement by the countries holding the debt that this wouldn't affect their credit rating? Isn't that something that could be decided on?
Well, the borrowing is not only from governments; they borrow in private markets as well. So the governments can't simply decree a credit rating.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when we talk about this, sometimes it takes a little bit of a kind of abstract sense for us. But I wonder if you could kind of convey to us how big the debt burden is that some of these countries are carrying.
If you take Indonesia, Thailand, and Sri Lanka, and India together for the four countries hit hardest, in 2002 they paid out $50 billion in just to service their debt. Of that, $7 billion went to rich country governments, Japan, UK, US, were the major ones.
So that's just to service their debt?
In total, Indonesia owes $132 billion. And they paid $17 billion back in 2002. It's a huge amount of money. I mean, they owe the most to Japan. They owe them $29 billion.
And I assume that when we're talking about these kinds of numbers, to kind of pay interest on the debt, then we're talking about money that's being taken away from services, infrastructure, and so forth that could be going into those countries.
Well, we Oxfam always argue that it could be done, that indeed governments could redirect funds from debt prepayment into health, into education, into reconstruction. And indeed, if countries are going to effectively fight poverty, countries around the world, they're going to have the resources to do so. And if they continue to spend so much on debt relief, they won't have the money to be able to fight poverty effectively.
Right. Now, in the light of the recent decision by the Paris Club to cancel Iraq's debt at the behest of the United States, what determines which countries are considered for debt relief?
Well, for an usual cancellation like happened with Iraq, it's when the powerful countries decide they want to do it for their own, for their political or strategic reasons. As is the case with Iraq, there is a program, an ongoing program of debt relief for the what are known as the highly indebted poor countries. Those are ones that have a certain level of income. That is, they're the poorest countries, and have a very great debt. And that's a program run out of the World Bank, which began in the year 2000, I believe, or 1999. And it offers relief after a period of time, and a number of conditions are met, policy change conditions are met. And it's a rather onerous process. And has provided a certain amount of relief to about 13 countries.
But so there's no kind of consistent way of figuring out who it is that will get debt relief.
Well, the World Bank does have a certain criteria that countries have to fulfill in order to get into the program, and it's restricted. There are 30 odd countries that are currently in the program or in the process of qualifying for debt relief. But not a lot of debt relief has been provided, frankly.
Right. Now, a recent article in the Globe and Mail pointed out that since the tsunami struck on December 26, AIDS has also killed 150,000 people, which is the same number of people as lost their life as a result of the tsunami. And I think 6,500 people a day died in Africa alone. And yet, the creditor countries continue to drag their feet on debt relief there. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, one in three of all the people who die of HIV/AIDS live in countries that are classified as heavily indebted, and they have some of the highest prevalence rates in the world. I'm referring to the HIPIC countries, highly indebted poor countries in that World Bank IMF program. More than a million people every year die in those countries of AIDS-related. Disease, and it's ridiculous because half of them are now spending more on debt than they are on health, more on repaying the debt than on health.
How do you explain the lack of political will there to kind of assist those countries with debt relief?
Yeah, how do we explain it? How do we explain the great outpouring of sympathy for the tsunami victims and the relative lack of sympathy for the people who are the as many and more people who are suffering with AIDS, the lack of, well, maybe it's not sympathy, but lack of actual funding. If you can quantify sympathy and how much money is actually put forward, can we explain it? In debt relief, the arguments they use, the creditor countries use against debt relief, are that it will encourage countries to borrow for things that they shouldn't borrow for. It'll encourage countries to borrow too much. It'll encourage countries to it'll encourage corruption. The money will get stolen. These are all. Certainly there are. Every government has problems that need to be resolved, but continuing to require these countries to make these payments, it's not what the wealthy are making these payments. The payments are coming off the backs of poor people in cut services and in heavier taxes on them. And it's unconscionable as far as we're concerned.
How feasible would debt cancellation be for the rich nations? What impact would it have on their economies?
Well, we calculated how much it would cost to cancel the debt of the poorest countries, the 32 poorest countries in the world. It would cost about $3 Canadian per person in the rich countries to cancel it outright.
That's not much.
That's how much it would cost. I mean, I'm saying per year for a number of years.
Yeah. Right?
But it could be canceled. It's not a lot. It could be done.
I'm kind of interested in exploring what you think of somebody who's in the middle of the work that you do is involved with working on issues around aid, debt relief, and so forth. And I just want to explore a little bit more, what you might think about the fact that there has been an outpouring of compassion around the tsunami disaster. But what do you think it would? Is there any way to kind of leverage that in people's minds so that they understand more systemic issues as well that affect, like debt relief, that affect people in southern countries?
Well, I think people are increasingly aware of it. Certainly, there have been the donors who've been calling Oxfam have been expressing their concerns about debt relief. Pleased that we're talking about debt as part of the response to the tsunami, that they've also been concerned about the aid going to Africa as well, and we've gotten a number of people, particularly in the last week, making donations for our work in Africa rather than the tsunami or in addition to tsunami relief because they recognize that it's essential. What we hope is that the government will seize this opportunity when the Canadian people are obviously concerned about suffering around the world, and to say, yes, we're responding to the tsunami, but we're also going to respond in a more long-term way by raising development assistance, increasing the level of development assistance to what Canada has always pledged to achieve, which is 0.7% of national income.
Now, I understand that Gordon Brown, the British finance minister, is bringing his agenda for debt relief to the G7 meeting of finance ministers this coming February. What's he going to be pushing for then?
Well, what he has called for is a program of what he calls 100% cancellation of debt. His idea, and he's proposing that countries all get together and figure out a way to simply eliminate the debt, then is that the rich countries should take over the payments of the debt for the poorest countries. And I hope Canada will sign on to this. Britain has already pledged to begin paying their portion of the debt for the poorest countries, which is if countries should be able to redirect their payment money to achieving the goals of reducing poverty, reducing hunger, fighting AIDS, then the rich countries should make those payments or eliminate the debt in some other way by simply paying it off.
And I understand that part of Brown's focus is he's calling for a new, what was called a Marshall Plan, a new kind of reconstruction for those poor countries.
Yeah. Well, the Britain is the president of the G8 this year. And the finance ministers meet the first week of February. Gordon Brown gets to set the agenda. Debt relief is squarely on it. And the British government has said they want to use the whole G8 process this year to marshal the energies of the wealthy countries to achieve the Millennium Development Goals, which are the goals that the international community all agreed to under the auspices of the United Nations some years back, which is to cut poverty in half by the year 2015, cut hunger in half, reduce child mortality. There are eight different goals that they all agreed to by the year 2015.
Now, I guess we should definitely be keeping our eyes on the G8 meeting this summer in Scotland, where some of these proposals will be coming forward. Can people influence that process, or at least try and lobby towards some of these things coming forth?
Absolutely. One of the things that, as you introduced me as someone who lobbies the Canadian government, I sit down with civil servants and with ministers and members of parliament. But they are, I can talk to them, we can have the intellectual argument, but what they really listen to are their constituents, particularly the MPs. And if your listeners would like to contact their members of parliament, write to the members of parliament or write to the Minister of Finance in favor of debt relief, it would make a huge difference.
Okay, so that's something that people can do for free to kind of try and help.
Absolutely. There's no postage required when you write to your member of parliament. And certainly a phone call to the constituency office, you can often get a meeting. They're always willing to meet with their constituents, so call your MP's local office and say, we'd like to talk about debt relief. And there's information on our website and on the website of the Halifax Initiative, which is a coalition we belong to, to give you the information you need in order to make your arguments to the Member of Parliament.
Mark, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye now.
I've been speaking with Mark Fried. Mark is Communications and Advocacy Coordinator with Oxfam Canada, and he spoke with us this morning from Ottawa.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.